Today in the Suffering and Deliverance series, I want to finish up talking about the life of Jeremiah. And if you'll remember last time, we left off right towards the end of Jerusalem's history, or that present Jerusalem's history anyway, and the Babylonians were coming, and Jeremiah had warned King Hezekiah that when Nebuchadnezzar, the king, got there, that he was not to try to flee, he was not to fight, but he was to submit. And we saw what happened to him, and I will cover that again here in just a minute. But we left off with Zedekiah keeping his word and keeping Jeremiah safe in the prison, which in Jeremiah's case, the prison was probably one of the safest places he could be because there were a lot of people that were trying to kill him. Well, the Babylonians did come, and they besieged Jerusalem for a year and a half before they finally conquered it. In Jeremiah 39, verses 1 through 2, Jeremiah 39, 1 through 2. Now we would think when a foreign nation comes and invades, captures the city, that Jeremiah is going to be in even more trouble now. But we're going to see that the Lord showed him favor in the midst of that overthrow. It's quite interesting. Jeremiah 39, 1 through 2 says, "In the ninth year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the tenth month came Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army against Jerusalem, and they besieged it. And in the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the fourth month, the ninth day of the month, the city was broken up." And if you do the math there, that is a year and a half, which would have been a miserable time. When your city's besieged, that means no food's coming in, nothing's going in or out, and things would have been very difficult. But Jeremiah was preserved in the prison. Now, unfortunately, Zedekiah, as we saw last time, did not listen to the counsel of Jeremiah, and he attempted to flee the city to get away. And he was captured, and it didn't go so well for him. Verse 4, Jeremiah 39, 4, "And it came to pass when Zedekiah, the king of Judah, saw them and all the men of war, then they fled and went forth out of the city by night, by the way of the king's garden, by the gate betwixt the two walls, and he went out the way of the plain." And we remember what happened to him. His sons were killed before his eyes, then his eyes were put out, and then he was carried away captive to Babylon, just like Jeremiah told him would happen. Verses 5 through 7. "But the Chaldeans' army pursued after them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho. And when they had taken him, they brought him to Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. Then the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah in Riblah before his eyes. Also the king of Babylon slew all the nobles of Judah. Moreover, he put out Zedekiah's eyes and bound him with chains to carry him to Babylon." So here we see two men, one faithful to the Lord that believes what the Lord said, one that didn't, one that feared men instead, one that looked to his own understanding. Jeremiah was spared. Zedekiah suffered horribly. We always want to do what God said. Always remember that. When God says something, even if it doesn't seem to make sense, even if it sounds like it's not going to work out, always do what God said. It will be, like Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, it will go well with them that fear God, that fear before him. It says, well, though a sinner do evil 100 times, and it go well with him, Solomon says, yet it will be well with them that fear God. Zedekiah got away with a lot of evil for a long time, but it caught up with him. But Jeremiah was delivered. So the city was burned and destroyed, and those who remained in the city or had fallen away to the Babylonians, they were all carried away to Babylon. Verses 8 and 9. "And the Chaldeans burned the king's house and the houses of the people with fire and brake down the walls of Jerusalem. Then Nebuzaradan..." You ever wonder why these guys are all named Nebu something? Well, it's because they're named after the Babylonian god, Nebo. Right? He was a Babylonian god. I believe that's where that name comes from. That's why they're all called Nebu something or other. "Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive into Babylon the remnant of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away, that fell to him with the rest of the people that remained. So it was almost a complete takeover. But we'll see, there were a few left. This is interesting. The poor of the land were left, and they were actually given vineyards. And this is just interesting how the Lord can provide for people that are least capable of providing for themselves. Verse 10. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left of the poor of the people which had nothing in the land of Judah, and gave them vineyards and fields at the same time. So the people that were well off, including the king, who tried to flee and escape and do good for himself, he ends up suffering terribly and being carried away to Babylon. Everybody else gets carried away to Babylon. And the poor that had nothing, they're given vineyards, they're given lands. They're actually blessed. Just reminds me of what Jesus said, "Blessed are ye poor, for yours is the kingdom of God." Right? So just because you're poor, just because you don't have means, doesn't mean that you have no chance of surviving a calamity. You might have a better chance of surviving a calamity if you're godly and God blesses you. There are some advantages to being poor. You know, sometimes poor people are just left alone. There's a verse in Proverbs, which we'll get to that one of these days in the Bible study, which says that about the poor heareth not rebuke is the second part of it. The ransom of a man's, it talks about that the rich man's riches are his ransom, but the poor heareth not rebuke. And that's not an exact quote. But anyway, in this case, the poor or the rich are exploited because of their riches. Nobody bothers with the poor. What's the point? You know, they kind of just look over them. And this was kind of a situation like that. So God saved Jeremiah from death while the nation was judged, because everybody except the poor got carried away to Babylon. And the king's, all of his sons and all the princes were killed, and a lot of people were killed. But Jeremiah was spared right in the midst of all that. While everybody else is suffering terribly, God reaches down, and it's like he just puts his hand around Jeremiah and protects Jeremiah while all this chaos is going around. And while everybody else is suffering, here's Jeremiah. It's like he's in the eye of the hurricane, protected. It's amazing. So when Jeremiah was found by the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar charged the captain of the guard to take care of him and do as Jeremiah said. Now this is really, really interesting. Verses 11 through 12, Jeremiah 39, 11 through 12. Now Nebuchadrezzar, same name, Rez or Nez, either one. Now Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, gave charge concerning Jeremiah to Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, saying, "Take him and look well to him and do him no harm, but do unto him even as he shall say unto thee." Now, why would Nebuchadnezzar, the leader of the free world, supposedly, you know, the leader of the world, basically, the leader of the empire of the world, why would he care about some Jewish prophet prisoner in the king's prison? Why would he even think to tell the captain of the guard, like his second in command, "Hey, this prisoner there, treat him well and do whatever he says"? Why would he do that? I'll tell you why. Because the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and he turneth it whithersoever he will. Proverbs 21:1. That's why. Why else would he do it? He wouldn't even know who Jeremiah was unless somebody told him, and why would they? So for some reason, because of God just providentially making it happen, this invading king says, "You take care of this little prophet here that's in that prison." So the next time you think, "Oh, this is impossible. No, my situation could never be resolved. The Lord could never deliver me out of this." Yeah, you remember Jeremiah. The Lord can do all kinds of things. He tells him, look at what he said there. He said in verse 12, "Take him, look well to him, and do him no harm, but unto him, But do unto him even as he shall say to thee. So you ask the prisoner what he wants done, and you do whatever the prisoner says. You do to him what he says. It's amazing. You know, I was thinking about Tim Stevens. I haven't talked about him for a while, that pastor up there in Canada. When he got, and this is not exactly the same situation, but he got arrested, and what did they do to him? They didn't even handcuff him. They put him in the cruiser without handcuffing him, which they never do to anybody, of course. They treated him well. No, they didn't do as he said. I'm sure if they would have done as he said, he would have said, let me go home. But they treated him well because he was a godly man. He stood up, he stood his ground, but he did so respectfully. What other prisoner of war gets treated like that? Have you ever heard of a prisoner of war that gets treated like that? Where the king of the invading army says, hey, whatever this prisoner says, you do what he says. That doesn't happen, does it? But it happens when the Lord wants it to happen. It says in Proverbs 16:7, when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. Nebuchadnezzar certainly was an enemy of the Jews, wasn't he? And he was made at peace with Jeremiah because Jeremiah's ways pleased the Lord. It says in Proverbs 22 and verse 29, seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men. Jeremiah's business was prophesying to the nation, and he was diligent in it, wasn't he? And he stood before kings. He stood before the king of his own nation and told him the truth, and if he would have listened to him, he would have been spared. He stood before the king of the ruler of the entire world, or at least in front of one of his officials, anyway. And he was shown favor by that king. That's what happens when you're diligent in your business. That's what happens when you're faithful to the Lord. Now, at the order of the Babylonian princes, Jeremiah was removed from the prison and carried home and dwelt among the people. Verses 13 through 14. So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, sent, and Nebushazban, Rabsaris, and Nergal-Sharezer, Rabmag, and all the king of Babylon's princes. Even they sent and took Jeremiah out of the court of the prison and committed him unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, that he should carry him home, so he dwelt among the people. He's liberated. His own people wanted to kill him. His own people put him in prison. When the invading army comes, they liberate Jeremiah and send him home. Amazing, isn't it? Now, the nation was so far gone that Jeremiah could only deliver himself by his righteousness. The rest of the nation was judged. They weren't even blessed as a result of Jeremiah. You know, and sometimes other people are saved as a result of the faithfulness of another person. Lot was blessed because of faithful Abraham. You know, Sodom and Gomorrah, the whole city would have been saved had there been 10 righteous. So just a few righteous would have saved a whole city. So in some cases, it only takes a few, and the Lord will pardon. Well, remember what he said in Jeremiah 5:1? Go ye to and fro throughout the city, and see if there is a man that executes judgment and seeks the truth, and I'll pardon it. So, you know, in some cases, the Lord will pardon just for the sake of one or a few. But in this case, this city was so evil that Jeremiah was only going to save or deliver himself by his righteousness. And the Lord talked about a situation like that in Ezekiel 14 and verse 14. Ezekiel 14:14. Though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they should deliver but their own souls by their righteousness, saith the Lord. So in that case, Ezekiel is also prophesying against Judah, the same people here at the same time, basically. And he's likewise prophesying before the captivity. And he's saying that this place is so evil that even if Noah, Daniel, and Job were here, they would only deliver themselves. And you could throw Jeremiah in that list. Jeremiah delivered himself. He didn't deliver anybody else, because the nation was so evil and far gone. Now, when Jeremiah was in prison, this is actually taking a step back in time, and the Bible does this sometimes, and I mean, men do it when they write stories too. Sometimes you'll be going along in a narrative, and then whatever happened during the time of that narrative really wasn't pertinent to what you're describing, so you wait until that situation's over, then you go back and you describe something that happened at the same time, but was kind of, you know, not exactly what was being discussed previously. So in this case, in Jeremiah 39, 15 through 18, here we go back before the Babylonians conquered them, and we see that Jeremiah had sent a message to Ebed-Melech. You remember Ebed-Melech was the other Ethiopian eunuch, the eunuch that delivered Jeremiah out of the dungeon. And Jeremiah sends this message from the Lord back to him and told him that he would be spared and not killed along with the rest of the people because he trusted in God. Let's look at verses 15 through 18. Jeremiah 39, 15 through 18. Now the word of the Lord came unto Jeremiah while he was shut up in the court of the prison, saying, Go and speak to Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Behold, I will bring my words upon this city for evil, and not for good, and they shall be accomplished in that day before thee. But I will deliver thee in that day, saith the Lord, and thou shalt not be given into the hand of the men of whom thou art afraid. There's a lot of preaching. Let me just do the last verse here. For I will surely deliver thee, and thou shalt not fall by the sword, but thy life shall be for a prey unto thee, because thou hast put thy trust in me, saith the Lord. Several things here. Number one, remember that your good deeds do not go unseen by the Lord. They may go unseen by men, and they may be forgotten. There was a time when a guy named Mordecai heard about a conspiracy to kill the king, and he turned those guys in, and they were hanged, and the king and everybody else forgot about it, and then one day the king can't sleep, and they bring out the chronicles of the kingdom to him, and they start reading, and he reads about how Mordecai foiled this plan, and the king's life was spared, and he's like, what happened to this Mordecai? And they're like, well, nothing. So then he goes on to reward Mordecai. So you got to remember, our good deeds sometimes do go unnoticed, but they don't go unnoticed by God. And this was the case with Ebed-Melech. His good deeds of saving Jeremiah did not go unnoticed. He believed and trusted in the Lord, and the Lord was going to deliver him. Secondly, notice that there in verse 17, he said that he's going to be not given into the hand of the men of whom he was afraid. Fear is no excuse for not doing what you need to do. Ebed-Melech could have just left Jeremiah in the dungeon and said, you know what, I don't want to stick my neck out here. If I try to come to Jeremiah's aid, I may be in the dungeon next to him. Even though he feared those men, he still did what he was supposed to do, and the Lord remembered it and rewarded him for it. So fear is no excuse. You know, it's the sluggard that says there's a lion in the way, a lion is in the street, right? He makes up, he really is just lazy, but he uses fear as an excuse. Well, that doesn't work with God. And Ebed-Melech was another man, like Jeremiah, that delivered himself by his righteousness in Jerusalem. Right, so there were a few. But Ebed-Melech and Jeremiah weren't going to deliver the nation, but the Lord did spare them individually. He can do the same thing for you. Now, Jeremiah was offered the opportunity by Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, to go to Babylon or to stay in Judea. So here he is, he's given his choice. And Nebuchadnezzar already told him, that is Nebuzaradan, just, hey, whatever he says, you do it. And so now he's given a choice. You can stay in Judah or you can go to Babylon. Jeremiah 40, verses 1 through 4. And the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, after that Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had let him go from Ramah, when he had taken him being bound in chains, among all that were carried away captive of Jerusalem and Judah, which were carried away captive unto Babylon. And the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, The Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place. Now I want you to, from verses 2 down to verse 4, remember who's speaking here. This is Nebuzaradan. This is some pagan in the Babylonian Empire, some worshiper of the Babylonian false gods. And here he is reproving the people of Judah. And he's right. Listen to what he says. Let's read verse 2 again. And the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, the Lord thy God, this is the God of the Hebrews, the Lord, Jehovah, all in caps there. The Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place. Now the Lord hath brought it, and done according as he hath said. Because ye have sinned against the Lord, and have not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing has come upon you. Think about this. This is a pagan who is reproving Israel and saying, hey, the Lord is judging you because you didn't obey the Lord. These stupid people wouldn't believe their own prophet. These stupid people wouldn't hear the Lord's word. And here's some pagan that's going to say, you know what, you're suffering because you wouldn't even listen to the Lord. And you rebelled against the Lord until the Lord's judged you. It's pretty bad when the Lord has to send some pagan to reprove God's people. Verse 4. And now, behold, I loose thee this day from the chains which were upon thine hand. If it seem good unto thee to come with me into Babylon, come, and I will look well unto thee. But if it seem ill unto thee to come with me into Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is before thee, whither it seemeth good and convenient for thee to go, thither go. Choice is yours, Jeremiah. You can stay here, you can come to Babylon, you can do whatever you want. How many prisoners of war get that option? Well, Jeremiah chose to go to Judea and to dwell among the people of the land. So the captain of the guard gave him some food, he gave him a reward, and he let him go. Verses 5 through 6. Not sure why Jeremiah chose to do that. I guess maybe because all of the reprobates that tried to kill him were all carried away captive, and all that's left is the poor of the land, I suppose. Maybe he didn't think he had too much to worry about. But he chose to stay in his own land, and he was allowed, and he was even given provision. Verse 5. Now, while he was not yet gone... Now while he was not yet gone back, he said, go back also to Gedaliah the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon hath made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people, or go whither wheresoever it seemeth convenient unto thee to go. So the captain of the guard gave him victuals, that's food, and a reward, and let him go. And then Jeremiah... And then went Jeremiah unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people that were left in the land. Now, this turned out to be not such a good decision. Hindsight's always 20/20. But it could be that he did this, and I'm sure it was, because he still had some more prophesying to do to these people, and then he had some more prophesying to do against Egypt, where he ends up going. And so he had, there's no doubt the Lord had reasons for this, but, you know, from Jeremiah's physical comfort standpoint, this didn't turn out to be the best decision. So Jeremiah prophesied unto the Jews, which were left in Judah after the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem, and he told them to remain in Judah and to not go down into Egypt. So most of the Jews are carried away to Babylon, but there are some left. There's the poor of the land, and then there's also, they left some, you know, governors and people that were in charge there. And Jeremiah tells them, this is in chapter 42, he tells them to stay in Judah. Don't go down to Egypt, because they wanted to go to Egypt. They thought it would be better in Egypt. They'd be spared war and famine and all kinds of stuff. And Jeremiah told them, don't go to Egypt, stay in Jerusalem. But these people are such hard-headed dolts. They wouldn't listen to Jeremiah when he prophesied to them for years, telling them to not resist Babylon, and they're not going to listen to him here either. Verses 9 through 18. Jeremiah 42, 9 through 18. Some people just don't listen. They bray a fool in a mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will his foolishness not depart from him. And these people are such. They won't listen to God's word no matter what. No matter how much they suffer, no matter how many times they get beaten, they're just still going to do whatever they want. Jeremiah 42 and verse 9. and said unto them, Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, unto whom ye sent me to present your supplication before him. If ye will still abide in this land, then I will build you and not pull you down, and I will plant you and not pluck you up, for I repent me of the evil that I have done unto you. So the Lord promises them, if you stay, I will build you, I will plant you, I'll take care of you. Now, I'm going to make this point later, but I can't help but make it now. Here are people that are living in a difficult, bad situation, but they are where the church is. The church was in Jerusalem. It was in Judah. The nation of Israel was God's church at that time. And God tells them, you stay here where the church is, regardless of the cost, and I will take care of you. Now let's keep reading. Be not afraid of the king of Babylon. You know, be not afraid of the rulers wherever you happen to live where there is a New Testament church. Don't be worried about those people. You stay where the church is, where God's put you. Be not afraid of the king of Babylon, of whom ye are afraid. Be not afraid of him, saith the Lord, for I am with you to save you and to deliver you from his hand. And I will show mercies unto you, that he may have mercy upon you and cause you to return to your own land. The Lord says, don't be afraid of Nebuchadnezzar. He's in my hand. He will do whatever I want him to. He will return you to your own land. He will have mercy upon you because I told him to. This is God's promise to them through the prophet Jeremiah. Verse 13, but if you say, we will not dwell in this land, neither obey the voice of the Lord your God, saying, no, but we will go into the land of Egypt, where we shall see no war, nor hear the sound of the trumpet, nor have hunger of bread, and there will we dwell. They say, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to stay where the church is. It's just too dangerous to stay where the church is. The economy's not good where the church is. There's tyrants that live where the church is. I'm going to go someplace else. I'm going to move out in the middle of the wilderness somewhere. I'm going to go out and, you know, in the middle of Wyoming somewhere because it's going to be better there. There's no church for hundreds of miles away, but I'll be safe there. Or I'm going to move to another country altogether because it's better there. I'll be safe there. People think like this. It'd be better to go someplace. The opportunities are better. I can make more money there. I could provide for my family better. I'll have more liberty, more freedom. I don't have to worry about being persecuted. It's not going to turn out well for people to do that. When you leave the church physically, geographically, to go somewhere else because you think it'll be better for you, you are a fool. And you are going to suffer for it. This is what happened to them. Verse 15, and now therefore hear the word of the Lord, ye remnant of Judah. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, if ye wholly set your faces to enter into Egypt and go to sojourn there, then it shall come to pass that the sword which ye feared shall overtake you there in the land of Egypt, and the famine whereof ye were afraid shall follow close after you there in Egypt, and there ye shall die. So shall it be with all the men that set their faces to go into Egypt to sojourn there. They shall die by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence, and none of them shall remain or escape from the evil that I will bring upon them. For thus saith the Lord God of hosts, the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, as mine anger and my fury hath been poured forth upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so shall my fury be poured forth upon you when ye shall enter into Egypt, and ye shall be an execration, and an astonishment, and a curse, and a reproach, and ye shall see this place no more. They were afraid of the sword, of the famine, and of the pestilence, and therefore they were going to flee to Egypt. And the Lord says, you flee, you leave my place where I dwell, and you go to Egypt. All those things are going to chase you down there and catch up with you and kill you. The sword, the famine, and the pestilence. I would not want to be the person that says, you know what, I think I'm going to move someplace else away from the church because I'll be safer there. Or the weather's better there. I've heard this too. Oh, the weather's so rough. I had a lady in Minneapolis talk about that. Oh, I think I want to move. The weather, you know, this weather is just so rough. Well, guess what? She didn't last in the church. If the weather is more important to you than God's church, you need to get your priorities straight. Now, granted, I mean, there are churches in more temperate climates. You could move there. You certainly wouldn't be wrong by doing so. But if you want to move someplace where there's not a church, you know, go down to Arizona or something because the weather's nicer there and there's no church there, not a good idea. You go ahead if you want to, but I recommend you read Jeremiah 42 a couple of times before you make that dumb decision. Now, they didn't listen to Jeremiah, and they took the entire remnant of Judah, including Jeremiah, down into Egypt. Poor Jeremiah was collateral damage here again. Jeremiah 43:1-7. And it came to pass that when Jeremiah had made an end of speaking unto all the people, all the words of the Lord their God, for which the Lord their God had sent him to them, even all these words, then spake Azariah, the son of Hoshaiah, and Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the proud men, saying unto Jeremiah, thou speakest falsely. The Lord our God hath not sent thee to say, go not into Egypt to sojourn there. You see, these people don't learn. They thought the same thing when Jeremiah prophesied that the Babylonians were coming, when he repeatedly told them, the Babylonians are coming. And they said, no, no, you prophesy falsely. You're lying. The Babylonians aren't coming. The other prophets told us they're not coming. You see, these people don't learn. They say, nope, you're lying when you said don't go to Egypt. You just want us to stay here and suffer instead of going down there and getting some leeks and onions and garlic, you know, and living the good life like, you know, like our forebears did when they were slaves down there. But Baruch the son of Neriah setteth thee on against us, for to deliver us into the hand of the Chaldeans, that they might put us to death and carry us away captive into Babylon. See, you just want us to stay here, and then Nebuchadnezzar can come back and kill us all. That's what you're really up to, Jeremiah. And it's that Baruch, he's putting you up to it, your scribe. So Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces and of all the people, obeyed not the voice of the Lord to dwell in the land of Judah. But Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces took all the remnant of Judah that were returned from all nations, whither they had been driven to dwell in the land of Judah, even men and women and children and the king's daughters and every person that Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had left with Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Jeremiah the prophet, and Baruch, the son of Neriah. So they came into the land of Egypt, for they obeyed not the voice of the Lord. Thus they came even to Tophanes. So the Lord had brought back some people that had been apparently carried captive to nations all over the place. That's what it said there, the remnant that were in the nations. He brought them back to Judah, so there were some of those people that had been brought back for some reason. There were people that had been left in the land by the Babylonians. There's Jeremiah, there's Baruch. There's a number of people there, and they say, you know what? We're going to Egypt, and we're taking you all with us. So Jeremiah ends up going down into Egypt, and while he's there, he prophesies against the Jews who went to Egypt, and he told them that they were going to die in Egypt. Except for those who would escape, whoever that would be, and it doesn't really say that I'm aware of. We got to go to the next chapter, Jeremiah 44:11-14. Like I said, in this series on Jeremiah, I'm just hitting the high points, so you can read those chapters on your own to get some of the more details and fill things in. Jeremiah 44:11-14. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will set my face against you for evil, and to cut off all Judah. And I will take the remnant of Judah that have set their faces to go into the land of Egypt to sojourn there, and they shall be consumed and fall in the land of Egypt, They shall even be consumed by the sword and by the famine. They shall die from the least even unto the greatest by the sword and by the famine, and they shall be an execration and an astonishment and a curse and a reproach. People are going to look at them and say, what a bunch of fools. If they would have just stayed in Judah where they were, where the Lord told them to, they'd be fine. But they had to go to Egypt, and now look at them. They're all suffering and dying. They're going to be an astonishment and a curse and a reproach. For I will punish them that dwell in the land of Egypt, as I have punished Jerusalem by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence, so that none of the remnant of Judah which are gone into the land of Egypt to sojourn there shall escape or remain, that they should return into the land of Judah, to the which they have a desire to return to dwell there. For none shall return but such as shall escape. So there would be a few, apparently. Some people were going to escape it. But for the majority of them, they were going to die in Egypt. They weren't going to go back. They'd never make it back. Now, it's interesting, the people that were carried away to Babylon, some of them did come back. They were there for 70 years, so it would have only been probably the children that were carried away. But, you know, when they came back to rebuild Jerusalem, and when they laid the foundation of the temple, it says there, and it's either in Ezra or Nehemiah, that the old men who had seen the glory of the first temple wept. So there were people that had seen the first temple, that remembered it, that came back. So, interestingly enough, the people that listened to Jeremiah went to Babylon. I don't think they were treated all that badly in Babylon either. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those guys certainly weren't treated badly in Babylon. And eventually the Medo-Persian king let them go back, and they made it back, and they saw their city again. But these fools that went to Egypt and wouldn't listen and wouldn't stay where they were told to stay, they died there, and they never made it back. Now, while in Egypt, Jeremiah also prophesied. He wouldn't stop. He prophesied against Israel and Judah when he was in Jerusalem. And then when he gets carried away to Egypt, he's still prophesying. He's prophesying against everybody. He prophesied against Egypt and its king in Jeremiah chapter 46. Chapter 47, he prophesied against the Philistines. Chapter 48, he prophesied against Moab. In chapter 49, he prophesied against the Ammonites, the Edomites, Damascus, Kedar, Hazor, and Elam. And then in chapters 50 and 51, he prophesied against Babylon. So he prophesied against everybody. You talk about a guy that was against the world. He just never stopped. He was one of those negative preachers. You know, those preachers that always have something bad to say about everybody. He wasn't one of these feel-good Joel Osteens. Can you imagine if Joel Osteen was carried away to Egypt? He certainly wouldn't have been prophesying against Egypt and Moab and the Ammonites and Damascus and Babylon. And he would have told them that God has a wonderful plan for your life and you're all going to be rich if you just maintain a good attitude. That's what he'd have told them. Now, to my knowledge, there is no record of what happened to Jeremiah after he was taken to Egypt. It doesn't say in the Bible, anyway. Not that I know of. If you find it, let me know, but I certainly have not found it. Now, he may have been one of the ones who escaped, because remember Jeremiah 44 and verse 14? It said that none would return except but such as them that shall escape. There it said right there at the end of the verse. He may have been one of the ones that escaped and went back to live on the land that the Lord had told him to purchase a long time ago. But there is no certain proof of that. You remember when he told him to purchase that land, what I'm talking about there in Jeremiah 32? Jeremiah 32, 6 through 10. He told him to go ahead and purchase this field, his uncle's field. And he weighed him out the money, and they went through the whole rigmarole and sealed it and so on. And he got the title to this land. And the Lord said there in Jeremiah 32 and verse 15, "For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, houses and fields and vineyards shall be possessed again in this land." It means people are going to come back. They're going to have their place that they left. Now, it's possible that Jeremiah was among those that escaped and went back and lived on his land that he had bought, that the Lord told him that people would go back and possess it. But there's no proof of that either. Now, according to tradition from extra-biblical sources, Jeremiah was stoned to death in Egypt. Now, this is tradition from extra-biblical sources, so who knows? It could be true. It might not be true. I'm just going to tell you what it is. I don't necessarily believe it or disbelieve it. I don't have any idea what happened to Jeremiah. But here is a quote from the Encyclopedia Britannica on their from their article on Jeremiah. It says, quote, "After Gedaliah was assassinated, Jeremiah was taken against his will to Egypt by some of the Jews who feared reprisal from the Babylonians. Even in Egypt, he continued to rebuke his fellow exiles, and everybody else in the world, for that matter, as well. Jeremiah probably died about 570 B.C. They say B.C.E. I hate that, so I say B.C. According to the tradition that is preserved in extra-biblical sources, he was stoned to death by his exasperated fellow countrymen in Egypt." This certainly could have happened, obviously. Lots of prophets were, you know, the majority of them were killed by the people of Israel. So that might have happened. We don't know. There's no biblical proof that he was martyred in Egypt. There's no biblical proof that he went back to Judah. So we don't know what happened to him. And that's kind of interesting, too, if you think about it, that the Lord didn't even bother to tell us what happened to him. You know, sometimes the Lord just doesn't want you to know things for some reason. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those that are revealed belong unto us, it says in Deuteronomy. All right, now there are just a couple of lessons that we can learn from the life of Jeremiah, 26 of them. And I'm going to give them all to you now. Lesson number one. Now I'm going to remind you of what the lesson even refers to, because it was, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, and you might have already forgotten. Lesson number one. God sometimes calls young men to perform great tasks for him, and he promises to sustain them during them. You remember when the Lord appeared to Jeremiah and he spoke to him, and he said, "Before he formed him in the womb, he knew thee," he knew him. And what did Jeremiah say? "I am a child." Right, so obviously he was a young man. I don't exactly know how old. But the Lord had a great task for him to perform, and he promised to sustain him during it. And he did, didn't he? And he will do the same thing to us. He still calls young men to do great tasks, and he sustains them. Lesson number two. We must never be afraid of the angry or sneering looks we get from people whom we are commanded to reprove. Remember what the Lord said to Jeremiah? Be not afraid of their faces. So when you have to reprove somebody, don't pay any attention to their angry or sneering look. Especially important for preachers, but bosses, people like that. Don't you worry about the looks they give you. Lesson number three. Just because everyone is against you doesn't mean you're wrong. The whole nation was against Jeremiah. But he was still right. Think about Jeremiah. Think about Noah. You know, the whole world was against Noah. He only had 7 people that would listen to him. Elijah. The whole nation was against him. 450 prophets of Baal. 400 prophets of the grove. The king and the queen. They were all against him. He thought he was left alone, he said. "And they seek my life." The Lord told him there were still 7,000. But it was Elijah versus the world. How about Jesus Christ? Everybody hated him. There was a lot of people that loved him too, but a lot of people hated him. He got grief from the Pharisees, from the Sadducees, from the chief priests, from Pilate, from Herod, from the people, from, you know, all over the place. Everybody, he was an enemy of the people. But just because everyone's against you doesn't mean you're wrong. You know, theologically, everybody's against us in this church. The thing is, we hold to so many different points of truth that are different from what the world believes, that we are bound to catch flack from just about everybody because of the variety of things that we hold which are biblical. So some people like us for some reason, and then for another reason they don't like us. You know, a lot of people like the fact that we don't celebrate Christmas. And I say a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of people out there online that I've met. But as soon as they find out that you don't keep the Jewish feasts, then all of a sudden, you know, they don't like you anymore. Lesson number four. God will sometimes pardon a city if even one man seeks the truth and executes judgment. That's what he said. Remember there in Jeremiah 5 and verse 1? You could be that person. You could be the reason why God pardons Excelsior Springs or Kansas City or Richmond or, you know, St. Joe or whatever. Wherever you live, you could be the reason. Seth and I could be the reason that our apartment complex doesn't get blown over in a tornado someday. You know, you never know. Lesson number 5. A lot of people pretend to be godly but are deceitful. You remember Jeremiah's persecutors? And they talked about, they used the Lord's name and they spoke as if they were godly and pious. And yet they weren't. They were liars. You'll find a lot of that today too. Lesson number 6. Most people would rather hear a lie that makes them feel good than to hear the truth which hurts. Remember what the Lord said to Jeremiah? The prophets prophesy falsely, and my people love to have it so. Most people would much rather hear a good-feeling lie than a stinging, hear-feeling truth. It's no different today. Lesson number 7. Some people are so wicked that they should not be prayed for. And so Jeremiah was told, pray not for this people, for their good, the Lord said. You know, John said in 1 John that there's a sin unto death, and I say not that ye should pray for it. When somebody's committed a sin unto death, which is a sin that is worthy of church exclusion and church judgment, you don't pray for that person's good anymore. Pray for their repentance, but don't pray that, oh Lord, I pray that their life goes wonderfully. No, don't pray for that. Pray that the Lord will spank them sufficiently to bring them back, and then their life will go wonderfully. You got to get your prayer in the right order. Lesson number 8. If you stand for the truth, you will be lonely. If you stand for the truth, you will be lonely. You'll be lonely among your family. You'll be lonely among your friends. You'll be lonely among your coworkers. You'll be lonely among your neighbors. You will be lonely. Because nobody cares about the truth these days. Nobody does. That's why this church is such a blessing to us. And that's why we should do everything that we can to make sure we maintain it and we keep it. Because this is a huge blessing. We can be among people here once or twice a week that are of like mind. And we don't have to be lonely. I feel bad for the people that are, you know, we're involved in some groups for health freedom stuff. And there are a lot of people, I mean, relatively, a lot of people, you know, you can find other people that are against the vaccines and the mandates and all that kind of stuff around here. But, you know, there's a group of us that meet every week. And for those people, that's all they've got. They've got this group of people that meet once a week, and pretty much the rest of their lives, probably all week long, they're surrounded with people that are lost their minds, you know, that are think, you know, everybody ought to be masked and vaxxed and everything else. And I feel bad for those people because they can't even go to church. I don't think any of them. They can't even go to church and be among people that they agree with. They've got that little group, whereas I've got that little group and I like it, but that's not my main thing. This is my main thing, right? I got people here that are of like mind, and not only about that issue, but about spiritual issues, which are more important. We've got a real blessing to have this church. Mark Twain said, be good and you'll be lonesome. And he was right. I've got a refrigerator magnet with Mark Twain and that quote on there that I got from Hannibal. The city, not the movie, in case you're concerned. I haven't even seen that movie, so don't worry about me there. Lesson number 9. Men will conspire to destroy those who stand for and proclaim the truth. This is what they did to Jeremiah. They tried to kill him numerous times, and he was saved by King Zedekiah. He was saved by Ebed-Melech. He was, you know, lots of people came to his aid, but these people conspired to try to destroy him because he proclaimed the truth. And think about Jesus Christ. they conspired to kill him too because he said the truth. That's why they hated him. He told them the truth. And they wanted to kill him. The Apostle Paul. Remember, there were men one time that conspired against him to try to kill him. They took a vow that they would eat nothing until they had killed Paul. They probably dispensed with that vow, I imagine, after they got busted. I don't think they probably starved themselves. Of course, you have the woke mob today. The woke mob conspires together to destroy people who proclaim the truth. And I mean the simplest truth. If you work for some major corporation, if you're somebody out there at all, and you post on Twitter that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, you know, that if you have X and Y chromosomes, you are a man. Is it a man or a woman? Yeah, you're a man. If you have XY chromosomes, you're a man. You could lose your entire livelihood. You could be fired from your job and your life destroyed for making a biologically truthful statement today. That's how insane people are. Lesson number 10. We're almost not even quite halfway through the lessons here from Jeremiah. Bold preachers can expect to be put in prison. That's why this is not exactly a job that you probably want to be applying for. Can be kind of dangerous. I mean, it's kind of like Alaskan sea fisherman, logger, and then preacher. You know, when it comes to levels of danger in the profession. So. Depending on the time and place and era that you preach, of course. You know, you think about these bold preachers that got put in prison. Micaiah, we already looked at him. Remember that? He prophesied to Ahab, and Ahab said, put him in prison, give him the bread of affliction and the water of affliction until I come back. And he says, you ain't coming back. You come back, I didn't speak by the Lord. Jeremiah, of course, got put in prison many times. The Apostle Paul was put in prison many times for preaching the truth. The Apostle Peter, remember, he was in prison, and he got let out a couple of different times. And then you have some modern, well, you have some old preachers, and then even modern preachers. Ever hear of John Bunyan? John Bunyan was an old Baptist in the 1600s. He got put in prison for preaching. And while he was in prison, he wrote one of the most widely sold books in the history of the world, called The Pilgrim's Progress. I'd recommend reading it. It's an allegory of the Christian life. Excellent little book. And then you have modern day preachers like James Coates and Tim Stevens. These guys would not back down. They would not obey the COVID cult. And they got put in jail for it. A couple of times. Tim Stevens did anyway. I think James Coates is only in there once. Lesson number 11. The Lord can deliver his people from prison by those who are sympathetic to them. And he can do this for you too. You know, you never know. You get put in prison for something, especially as it regards your faith. There could be some person in that prison, just for some reason, decided to show kindness to you, to work on the inside, to talk to the whoever the powers that be are, and to work to get you out. They could do that. They did it to Jeremiah. The Lord could certainly do it again. Lesson number 12. After being persecuted and imprisoned and then delivered by God from prison, the Lord will sometimes allow us to go back. You know, it says in the Psalms, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth them out of them all. But just because you get put in prison and then delivered, don't just suppose that you might never go back, or just because you make it through some great affliction doesn't mean that you're never going to suffer it again. You very well might. Lesson number 13. Now we're halfway. If a preacher condemns his own nation for its sins, he will be called a traitor. Jeremiah was. They said that thou fallest away to the Chaldeans. They thought he was on the side of the Babylonians. And as I said, I think it was last time, when a preacher preaches against the sins of this country, what are you called? Un-American. Right? You're un-American. Lesson number 14. If we are in prison or suffering affliction for proclaiming the truth, and we're given a second chance to change our message, we must be steadfast in the truth, regardless if it means staying in prison. This, to me, is one of the most important and most profound lessons in the book of Jeremiah. This man was in prison, and on a couple of different occasions, he was called out and asked if there was any word from the Lord. And how much you want to bet when Zedekiah called him out and said, "Hey, is there a word from the Lord?" And if Jeremiah would have said, "Yep, the Lord changed his mind, the Babylonians aren't coming, and this nation is delivered. Let's have a national festival and celebration." How much you want to bet he would have been left out of prison? All he had to do was lie. All he had to do was change his story. But he wouldn't. When Zedekiah said, "Is there a word from the Lord?" He said, "Yep, the Babylonians are coming, and they're going to destroy this place." My paraphrase. So if you ever happen to be in prison, and you have a chance to lie, to get out, to change your story, to recant, to say, "Well, you know, I don't really believe in all that stuff that I said I did. I don't really believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. I don't really believe in sovereign grace. I don't really believe the King James is the Word of God," whatever. You ever have a chance to do that? Double down. I don't care if you spend the rest of your life in jail. Double down. Never compromise. Never capitulate. John Bunyan again. I didn't tell you the rest of his story. He was put into prison for preaching. And they told him, they came to him and said that they would let him out of jail if he just would agree to stop preaching. He said, nope. He stayed in jail, I don't know, it was a long time, years. He would not agree to stop preaching. That's what a good man does. Lesson number 15. Don't be afraid to ask your captors for mercy. They might just deliver you and make your situation easier to bear. I can't tell you how many times, I've told people this, many times, people will tell me about a problem they're facing, and I say, "Well, did you ask if the person will do this? Or did you ask if something, whatever the situation is?" "Well, no, they won't." "Well, how do you know they won't?" "Ask. You have not because you ask not." Sometimes all you have to do is ask. And you'd be amazed, I'm amazed every time I come across it, at the number of people that simply will not ask because they're like, "Oh, it won't matter. They won't do it. They'll never." You don't know that. Just ask. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. You'd be amazed at what you can get if you just ask. You know, my dad's in the hospital right now. I was talking to him. I'll tell you about it later, but I was talking to him last night, and his cell phone, he didn't take his charger with him when he went to the emergency room, and his cell phone was dying. And I said he wasn't going to be able to talk long. And he said, "Yeah, my wife told me just to see if they had a charger here, but I don't do that kind of thing." I'm like, "Well, Dad, you know, it's USB. They probably have one. If you might just ask, they'd probably just charge your phone for you." "Oh, yeah, maybe I'll do that." Well, sure enough, some nurse just plugged his phone in and charged it for him. So you could just sit there and say, nope, they'll never do that, and then have your phone be dead and nobody can get a hold of you when you're in the hospital. Or you could just ask, right? And you might be amazed at what happens. Let's see, where was I? Number 16, lesson number 16. If our ways please the Lord, He will make our enemies at peace with us. Remember Jeremiah, Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan? Here's a man, his ways please the Lord. And the king comes in and says, "Hey, that prisoner right there, you start taking orders from him. Whatever he tells you, you do it." You think about that for a minute. Lesson number 17. Those who are friendly towards us will often turn on us when they face pressure from others. Just remember that too. I mean, these are a mixture of happy lessons and sad lessons, right? I mean, I got to be honest with you. I'm not Joel Osteen. So if you want Joel Osteen, you know, there's lots of other preachers out there I guess you could probably try to find. But I got to tell you the whole truth. You know, Paul said at my first answer, "No man stood with me, but all men forsook me. And I pray God that it not be laid to their charge." Right? Sometimes people, even those that say that they'll be with you, when the pressure gets on, they'll turn coat and run. So just don't be you know, shocked, startled when that happens. I also don't want you to be skeptical of every person and of every friend of yours that says, hey, if you ever need anything, you call me. I'll be there for you. And you say, yeah, right. Benedict Arnold right here. There's no way he's not going to help me. He'll turn on me in a heartbeat. Just don't be super surprised if people don't come through for you. But also, I'm not saying to be a total skeptic and not imagine that anybody will come through for you either. Lesson number 18, God can deliver us from situations which seem humanly impossible to be saved from. Remember Jeremiah at the bottom of the dungeon? No physical possible way that Jeremiah could get out of that dungeon on his own. And who's going to let him out? He was just put there by the king, by the power of the state. How in the world are you going to get out of a dungeon when you've been put there by the power of the state and it is absolutely physically impossible for you to climb out of there? Well, you never know when there's not an Ethiopian eunuch named Ebed-Melech that's going to come along and he's going to save you because he's going to put a bug in the ear of the king and the king's going to give him 30 men to come and pull you out of that well. You should never say that a situation is hopeless. I don't care how bad it is. It is never hopeless. If God be for you, who can be against you? It's never hopeless, no matter what. And if you say, I've just been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, this is hopeless. It's not hopeless. I mean, best case scenario, you're going to die and go to heaven. That's not hopeless at all. I mean, what are you talking about? Hopeless would be having to live in that condition for a long time. Hope is, get me out of here, Lord. I mean, come on. People have weird ideas about stuff, though, sometimes. Lesson number 19. God will use acts of godly deception to deliver his people. You remember that when Jeremiah talked to Zedekiah, and then Zedekiah said, hey, if the men come and they ask you what were we talking about, you tell them that you asked me about if I could stay in this other prison or something. I forget what he said exactly. But he basically told them, hey, you know, just lie to them. Tell them we talked about something else. And Jeremiah did that. He told them, this made-up story, and the Lord blessed it and used it to deliver him. David did that a number of times in his life as well. Lesson number 20. Those who disobey God out of fear will be destroyed, while those who obey will be spared. Zedekiah disobeyed God out of fear. He wouldn't believe what the Lord said. He did not believe that he was going to be delivered if he just submitted to the king of Babylon, and he ran out of fear, and he ended up suffering for it tremendously. But the people that obeyed, they were spared. They were spared. And that happened in Jerusalem too, in the second destruction of Jerusalem. The people that didn't try to escape the city when the Romans finally broke in and they saw the horrible condition that those people were in, they spared the lives of a bunch of them. Daniel talks about it in his prophecy right at the very end of the book. It's kind of it's a prophecy that a lot of people get all mixed up. But the people that stayed right until the end, they were spared. The people that tried to escape weren't. Lesson number 21. God can save the righteous from a judgment that the rest of the nation suffers. He did it for Jeremiah. He did it for Ebed-Melech. And he can do it for us too. You know that? He can protect you right in the midst of it. He can do like he did to Jeremiah and just reach down and just cover you with his hand until his wrath be passed. You say, how could he do that? How is he going to do that? I have no idea how he's going to do it. I just know he can do it. Lesson number 22. God will make those who trust him find favor in the eyes of foreign invaders. He did it for Jeremiah. Jeremiah had no connection to the Babylonians. Jeremiah had no long-lost cousin that happened to be living in the palace in Babylon and knew the king and, you know, some... He didn't have any of that. The Lord just providentially made him find favor with the king of Babylon. And the Lord could do the same to you too if we happen to be taken over by the Chinese or the Russians or something someday. Lesson number 23. God will allow us to suffer captivity repeatedly if it's his will. Remember the verse that I gave you a minute ago, that many are the afflictions of the righteous. You know, so it's not just a one and done thing necessarily. That happened to Jeremiah repeatedly. Remember, he was in jail, he was out of jail, he was in jail, he was out of jail. Then the Babylonians come and they let him go to his own house. And then all of a sudden these jerks won't listen to him and they carry him down to Egypt. And he's in captivity in Egypt again, right? So it just happens over and over again sometimes. Lesson number 24. While in prison, never stop preaching repentance and righteousness. Take advantage of a captive audience, literally. I mean, I'll tell you, I often pray for opportunities for evangelism. Prison would be one, that's for sure. You'd have lots of opportunities there. I mean, you got all these people you're hanging around with all day long, and, you know, people in prison tend to be interested in God anyway. You know, there's no atheists in foxholes. How many of them are actually God's children? Who knows? But I've heard of lots of preachers that have been in prison and that held Bible studies in prison, and there were conversions in prison. Pastor Mott baptized some guy in prison one time when Stuart Crane was in jail up in Duluth. He would go up there to visit him every so often, and Stuart Crane had converted some guy there, and apparently it must have been a lower security prison. And I just found out about this just the other day. Pastor Mott came up there. The prison guards took the guy out of the prison. They drove around and found, I don't know if it was a river or a stream or a pond or something, and Pastor Mott baptized the guy. Prison guards went with him. You know, so if you're in prison, take the opportunity and share the truth of the gospel. I certainly would. Lesson number 25. God will bless those who stay where the church is regardless of the cost, and God will punish those who move away from the church for some perceived benefit or safety. Remember what Jeremiah told them, what the Lord told them through Jeremiah. If you stay in Judah, I will build and I will plant and I will repent of the evil that I have thought to do unto thee. He was going to bless them if they stayed in Judah, where the Lord's name was. But if they went to Egypt to escape the sword and the famine and the pestilence, guess what? Wasn't going to go well with them. And then lesson number 26, the last one. God's faithful people are sometimes martyred despite their faithfulness. Now, we don't know if Jeremiah was martyred. He might have been, he might not have been. But we do know of people that were martyred, that were faithful, don't we? You ever heard of a guy named Jesus Christ? Anybody? Right? He was martyred because he was faithful, wasn't he? How about John the Baptist? Martyred because he was faithful, martyred because he rebuked the king and provoked the ire of the king's new wife / sister-in-law. You know? How about Stephen? Stephen boldly contended for the truth and he was stoned for it. James was killed by Herod, right, when he was in prison. History has it that all the apostles except for John were all martyred. So yeah, sometimes God allows people to be martyred despite their faithfulness or because of. You know, you read about the martyrs there in the book of Revelation. It talks about the martyrs numerous times, and they cry, "How long, O Lord, faithful and true, dost thou not avenge and judge our, or dost thou not judge and avenge our blood?" So just because you're a faithful saint doesn't necessarily mean you're never going to have any trouble and that you might not even die for your faith. And if you do die for your faith, you're going to have a big crown in heaven. You're going to be one of a special group up there in heaven that died for your faith. So I'm not going to cover Jehoiakim now. We've been going long enough anyway. So we'll pick it up with Jehoiakim, who was a king of Judah that actually you kind of go back in time, and this is another one of those instances. At the end of the book of Jeremiah, it talks about this guy Jehoiakim that was in prison in Babylon, and he gets released, and we'll talk about all that. But Jehoiakim was actually the king before Zedekiah, but we'll talk about all that next week, Lord willing. Thank you for your kind and patient attention.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.